In the Fale is a music show on ABC Radio Australia, hosted by me, Paola Tukefu. I'll be spinning my favorite tunes from dancehall to disco, calypso to country, reggae to roots, and hip-hop to house music, from across the eras to keep the kids and the aunties happy. If it has a pumping groove, I'll be bringing it to you to bump you into the weekend.
Search up In the Fale to listen online or find it in the ABC Listen app.
This is an ABC podcast.
This is Niche and Footy on ABC Radio Australia.
Malo ni to our Tokelau audience, as it is Tokelauan Language Week. And of course, welcome everyone to Niche and Footy Friday. Oh, not Niche and Footy Fridays, we're Monday. Holy, there we go. The go-to place for Pacifica footy news and stories in the Rugby League and Rugby Union worlds. My name is Sam Wykes, and with me is Chantelle Stowers, because she absolutely killed it on Friday, and she's here for our Monday show because T is still in PNG. And if you are Samoan, Cook Islander, PNG, I'm sure you've had a great Monday, a great start to your day because of all the wins they had over the weekend. But Shawnee, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me back, Sammy. And yes, it is Monday.
I'm sure
you want to forget the weekend.
I wanted to forget it, yes.
but today we'll be going through Pacifica Championships results. They were massive. We've got Shelley Long coming in to wrap up the women's games. Rugby news will be happening as well. Sammy's going to cover that. And our special guest for today is John Wilshire. He is a PNG OG. He captained at the 2008 World Cup and retired in 2009.
Yeah, we're looking forward to that chat later on in the show. Let's get into it.
Moment of the week.
Yes, it is our moment of the week. And I did see on the run sheet that it was going to be Samoa's victory, and I cut that out straight away to make sure that we share a bit of love elsewhere.
No, we can keep it. We can keep it there.
Yeah, are we going to do two, no. three, four, whatever? But congrats, Samoa. Well played. Absolutely outclassed. The mighty Tongans, but hey, we go again this week. But moment of the week. This is what caught my eye. I just thought it was special. Seeing the Broncos team, so the NRLW and the NRL men's team, travel over to Port Moresby and showcase their trophy. Did you see the crowd there? Did you see the crowds that showed up for these teams?
It was, what do you call it? Like a tuna can? That tight, that full, jam-packed.
A tuna can?
I don't know. There's a saying. It's not coming to mind
Sardines.
Right now. Sardines.
Sardines. That's the one. A tuna can.
There we go.
It was packed in there and I absolutely loved it. And what I wanted to actually highlight from this, actually, I'm not sure if you saw some of the celebrations from the Bougainville Bamboo Band. Do you know who they are?
I don't know who they are.
You don't know who?
Well, no.
You're going to find out right now. So as the team landed, they were practicing the Brisbane Broncos theme song or their victory song after it, and bamboo, and they used their thongs or their silipa or jandals, whatever you want to call them, as what do you call them when you slap?
Drums.
Anyway, let's have a listen to them doing the Broncos theme song ahead of the team's arrival. That is the Bougainville Bamboo Band just waiting, just playing the songs, the theme song for the Broncos. I thought that was outstanding. Go to the socials and just have a look at that, because it is actually very impressive that those the slap of a thong, or jandal, whatever you want to call them, can make such beautiful sounds.
Exactly. So incredible. Talents uncapped.
Exactly right. And that was my moment of the week, but I believe you wanted to bring something to the party as well.
Yes. So one of the moments of the week for me was Julia Robinson and the Jullaroos v Fitu Samoa game. Superwoman try. So athletic, so outstanding. It's just showing how good our female athletes are and how much they continue to improve.
She now becomes the highest try scorer, I believe, for the Jullaroos.
Yeah, I think so.
But the way she flew through the air, pinpoint accurate kick from just Southwell.
Yep. Which, again, another talent. What confidence to bring out a kick like that. Yep. And the linking up with Julia Robinson. Like, she has not played in a club or an NRLW team with her, right?
Exactly. That's the cohesion straight off the bat. And that was impressive. Flew through the air, grabbed it, put it down for a nice try for the Gillaroos, who had a massive win. And we'll discuss more of that with Shelley Long later on in the show.
Yep.
Hi, I'm Yasmin Clydesdale, and you're listening to Nation Footy.
Yazzy Clydesdale, how's her ribs? Did you see that shot? I think it was Destiny Brill.
Yep, she got in and under. Perfect shot. I've never, ever seen Yazzy stay down.
I've never seen that as well. So that must have hurt.
That certainly did. Must but have not hurt. Too much, because she just got back up there, and I thought for all money she was going to be taken off, but no.
Nah, not Yazzy. Not Yazzy. Man, what a champion. She kills it every week. But let's talk about Pack Champs. Two incredible games. Of course, we'll drop in with Shelley to talk about the women's games that were amazing as well. First up, we're going to go to the Saturday game, Port Moresby, between the Kumus and the Cook Islands. The PNG Kumus got up 40-28. Lockie Lamb, player of the match. Fantastic atmosphere over in Port Moresby.
Yeah, fantastic atmosphere as always. They are a crowd that you always do want to play in front of, but they would have been cheering so loud for PNG. I touched on it on Friday that the Cook Islands have had improvement every single year now. They had a 10 points on the board 2023, 20 points on the board 2024, and then this year, 28 points. So that's definitely an improvement from the Cook Islands team. And at moments in the game, they were definitely in that battle. They didn't just get swept away and taken away by the PNG.
Yeah, you're not wrong about their attack. It's definitely something that someone like Carmichael Hunt, who is their coach, would have a lot of knowledge and detail around how to attack. It is the other side of the ball that you need to focus on. You know, defense wins games. And I look at probably Robert Darby's first try. I believe it was his first try. Like, the line speed and the connection was just non-existent from the Cook Island players for him to just march straight through. Yeah. You know, almost touch footy like. So there was some impressive tries being scored by PNG. But when you look at the way they picked out some of those defensive deficiencies, mm-hmm, from the Cook Islands, what did you see there?
Yeah, so apart from scoring on the edges, which if you're a team playing rugby league, you're never okay with someone scoring on you. But if it is on the edge, on the wings, that's okay. We can accept that. We don't want it to happen through the middle. So PNG would definitely had a few tries through the middle. You already said Derby, he got a double. Both of those tries were actually quite easy for him. He just threaded through. The inability for Cook Islands to stay linked and connected for the entire game, he picked it out and he ran through. Obviously, he's quite athletic and fast and he can back it, but it was a bit too easy. And then I noticed that they were able to kind of attack at the back row position. So between the half and the second row, back row, they were really good at pinpointing that, putting pressure on and running lines into those areas.
How do you count the defenders from wing, centre, back row, or is it
yep, half wing, centre, back row, halves?
So is that where the seam?
Yep, I've noticed it was there. And they were able to shift and move it at times, and they took their times perfectly when the defence was relaxed.
Yeah, you're not wrong, and it was evident. That's why the scoreline was probably the way it was, mm-hmm, them scoring 40 points. And one of the guys that everyone was really excited to see was Garo Voro. Mm-hmm. Again, PNG Hunters this year. He sort of looks like Jerome Luai.
He does the headgear, exactly. The cheek.
He does have that cheek about
yes,
it, looks
he does.
Like, with that flair, especially the way he celebrated after this try.
So 38 metres out. A Hail Mary here for the Cook Islands, down by six. They go left. Iorka away to Cowley. Then to Masters, back to Demetrio, and he gets it away with a flick pass. Iorka back to Masters, intercepted. Thriller at the National Football Stadium. 38-28 kick to come. It was an intercept on the last play of the game. And Dean Halitau, the home crowd is delirious because the Kumuls have found a way.
How loud was that eruption when the intercept came?
It extreme. You can't even hear the commentators off it, and they're not even there.
Exactly. And big shout out to Maury. He's had some heart condition problems where he had to go to hospital, and this was his first game back since then. So, Maury, it is great to hear you back behind the mic. Much love, and we can't wait to keep hearing your fantastic commentary for a very, very long time. So don't go anywhere soon, my friend. But that was, like, just the crowd, the home ground advantage, it just makes sense that they're getting an NRL side.
Yeah, I agree. We need one, absolutely. They've got so much talent. We can't keep leaving it till these test matches and these fixtures for them to be seen. They live and breathe it. We need to give them more.
Yep, it was a great win for the PNG Kumuls, and they'll now turn their attention to Fiji when they play against them this week. But now we turn our attention to the Tonga 13 versus Tor Samoa, and a massive, massive congratulations to Tor Samoa. The better side won. They came out the blocks fast and they were relentless the whole game. And I just thought, yeah, you deserve to win. There's nothing there. Can't blame the ref. Can't blame anyone. Too good on the day.
Sammy, it looks like you're hurting.
Hurting.
It is coming out
you
very slowly. You're not just being calm and collected. It's hurting.
It does hurt. And you know what? The funny thing is, I've been retired for about, I think, 4 years now. And I never really rode emotions of a game because when you're in the thick of it, you don't really watch it as a fan.
Yeah.
But ever since last year, I reckon year three, year four, I've actually started watching games as more of a fan, and I'm riding those emotions a little bit more now. So you're right, it did hurt a little bit. But at the same time, I was just so, so happy just to see 44,000 people come into Brisbane to watch that game, because I reckon if you go about 5-6 years ago, there's probably 10,000,
yep,
8,000 people maybe watching those games in, and you wouldn't even know it was on.
Yep, yep.
It was sort of word of mouth.
Yep.
But now prime time, and just to see how our two nations went at each other, that was special to see.
Yep. And as you said, it's the crowd that's insane, but it's not only the stadium crowd, it's everything. The festivities that happen outside of the stadium, it is like filling out streets still.
Yeah. You know where I live in Sydney is there's this road called Woodville Road just out in Sydney's west. So it was Saturday night. They had the parades. They lined up the main roads, either side of it. There would have been thousands of people with their Tongan and Samoan flag just waving, and then the horns were just beeping all the way through. It's just something you just wouldn't see anywhere else. What did you make of, firstly, the anthems and the Sivatau and the Sipitau and how that all came about, and then the opening 10 minutes?
Yep, as you said, becoming a fan of the game, you're definitely much more emotionally invested and you've really enjoyed the display of it. And I think that all starts with the Sivatau and the Sipitau.
Yep.
Like when a game starts like that, how can you not drop into it immediately with all the feels? It's the thing that I love seeing from both the men and the women and any of the cultural countries that get their opportunity to play on that platform. That is a thing that everyone comes for.
You look at the way that both sides delivered their, Tonga with their Sipitau and the Samoans with their Sivatau. It was almost like orchestrated through how good, like they were in sync together. You know, it was like Tonga, it seemed like they dragged their own out. They allowed, there was that mutual respect of how it went back and forth. But amazing, amazing scenes. And then let's get to the game itself. The opening 10 minutes. What did you make of Samoa coming out the gates fast, hard, and just they looked ready to go?
They were ready to go from the buzzer straight away. And Samoa and Tonga usually battle it out head to head and keep it maintained for at least the first 10 minutes. And then you start to see who will take the lead from that point on. But Samoa were on. They were on the next level, something else. They looked extra agile. Like whatever was happening when they were moving forward and gaining momentum, they just had multiple options off the ball.
Yeah, I agree. And a big part of that was Junior Bolo, the way he was that link player. You know, normally we see him in the middle of the field for the Parramatta Eels and just sort of find your front, just go forward, that's it. But he was another ball player out there. So how important and how influential was his performance as a whole for Samoa to be able to, you know, just keep those standards really high and come away with the victory?
Yep, absolutely crucial. And here's one of the guys who led the way, choosing to play for Samoa first. We remember that time. But his collaboration with May and Haas, Oh.
For Payne Haas's try?
Yeah. That try, I was just like, gold. Forward, try, magic.
It's such a good point you bring up around the way that Samoa utilised their big men as not just being players to just run through a brick wall and that's it. There was actually a bit more finesse to their game. They were still direct, but the interchanges of passes between their big men, that was the difference, because Tonga, yep, they had Adam Fanua-Blake. He was making those meters, and Dimitrik as well, Halasima, like they were making some inroads, but it felt like it was just like, you have a go. That was it.
And yeah, you try, but you come up against that wall and no one was really breaking through. But then if you flip it over, they were creating so much opportunities from Samoa because of that ability. It's no longer forwards run hard forward and backs give the pizzazz and do all the magic on the outside. Everyone has added extra to their game.
I agree. And another player that probably needs special mention is Jeremiah Nanai. Those efforts off the ball, those kick chase lines that he was having, like it is underestimated like how important someone is to kick chase. Like not just as a back, but a forward to be able to do that and be in the pitcher.
Yep.
Like impressive.
You've got to remember at second row, you are almost like another center and you have the ability to run onto the ball and ball play a little bit more, but you are also pulled into the havoc of having to tackle relentlessly. And so he's doing two huge jobs and then he turns around on the attack and backs up. And the only reason why he scores tries is because he brings that extra energy and goes the extra mile, brings the extra 1%. So his trials were outstanding and they were game changer. And he has once again lifted the level of way that he is playing. So these players, they aren't just settling going, we're going to be at World Cup, we're in the lead against Tonga. They're taking it to the next level and taking it on board that they want to be the best players of nations.
You're not wrong. And we'll flip over to the Tongan change room after the game. Absolute devastation. You can tell from their body language how much it hurt them to be in that change room and not coming away with the victory.
Yeah. See you feeling it. You're hurting right now.
My eyes are closed
about
it.
Yes, it hurt.
But like, it just showed like that's how much it meant for both teams. You got both ends of the spectrum. Samoa feeling the victory and the highs and what that means to them, but also the hurt for Tonga. Like that's also important because it just shows you how much both teams really cared about playing for their country and doing the best that they could to help their tiny island celebrate. But how does Tonga pick themselves up off the canvas to be able to go again this week against New Zealand? Because they're going to have to try and win by 17 points to get themselves in a grand final.
Yep.
Like, how do they pick themselves up off the canvas?
Yeah, well, first of all, just touching on looking in the change rooms, they had that lightning break as well. So watching them in the change rooms at that time, the energy was already
flat.
And then a 90-minute stop and having to get back out there for 20 minutes or so, they could have turned the game around and just come out firing, but they didn't. I think that they need to add a little bit more strategy to their game. Samoa is very strategic and very flary. So I think for Tonga, that's what they're going to have to bring. They've always just battled it out and gone head to head, muscled it out and had a little bit of speed who can score on the edge. Someone who's a little bit cheeky, make the difference in the scoreline. But now we need to have more strategy in the game.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't know how you get yourself back up after 90 minutes.
Yeah.
A 90-minute break, if that's me, man, I'm tearing
everything.
Especially
when you're sore anyway from that game. It's a sore that you won't believe. So your muscles have completely started to feel it.
Oh, mate, I would have needed the oil on the joints to try and get them moving again. But hey, spectacular game. That's what it's about. And we look forward to more test footy between all of our Pacific Island nations moving forward. And we'll just finish on the Ashes game. The Kangaroos took on England in the first game of the Ashes. Scoreline was 26-6 to the Kangaroos. Reece Walsh, again, playing in a dinner suit. He is an amazing player. I'm sure he's got to be Tongan somewhere so we can get him into the Tongan side. I would love that.
Yep, he's Māori.
Māori? Oh, there you go.
Yes, he is Māori. There we go.
But when I look at Kotoni Staggs, I'm looking at Tino Fa'asua Maliawi. They're watching that game. No doubt they're watching that game for Tonga Samoa.
They will be some point. Everyone will want to put on that jersey at some point. It's just a matter of time and when. But very proud of them for repping the way that they are on that platform over in England. Australia is still playing extremely well. So I think it's very enticing and we will see them in that jersey at some point.
Oh man, the World Cup. I'm actually finally excited for a Rugby League World Cup. Can't believe I'd say that. But anyway, you can hear the Pacific Champs and the Ashes live on ABC Radio Australia. And of course, we'll talk PAC Champs women, the women's game with Shelley Long very shortly, but we are going to get to Rugby Union.
Hey, I'm Charlie Gamble, and you're listening to Nation Footy.
Yes, we're going to talk Rugby Union now. Again, it's not going to be long compared to Rugby League, but we do finally have a game to talk about after a couple of weeks or a few weeks off of not talking any Rugby Union. But the Wallabies took on Japan. This was actually a very, very tight game. Can't believe when I think about all the scores that have happened in history between the Wallabies and Japan, there have been blowouts. But this time around, 19 points to 15. The Wallabies won in Tokyo over there. I want to take you back, Sean. I want to take you back to 95, the 95 World Cup. 30 years ago, where were you?
I was a baby because I'm only 21.
Ah, that's a good one. I think you got me for age, though. Not that bad.
Stop.
But you look 20, though. You actually look 20.
I am 20. We're 21.
You look 21. But that game, 145 to 17, that game 30 years ago,
140.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, not with the Wallabies. Sorry, the biggest hiding that they had was actually against the All Blacks. 145 to 17, the All Blacks over Japan.
Wow. Wow. I've not seen anything over 70.
Really?
70 to 90.
I've lost by 90, so I've been in those areas before. But so that's Japan's biggest loss. And 2007, so not even that long ago, when you think about it from a test footy point of view, the Wallabies won 91 points to 3. They played them again in 2017, 63 to 30. They played them again in 2021, 32 to 23. This time around in 2025, 19 points to 15. So I'm looking at that from a 30-year span and how they're bridging the gap. And the reason why I bring that up is because when I look at the score lines with, say, even the PNG Orchids or even with the Fetu Samoa in the weekend, it's easy to get caught up in the results that are happening now. But Sean, it's still very much in its infant years.
Absolutely. It is all about the long game when you are thinking about new countries in a sport. And Fetu Samoa, first time in Tier 1, that is a big scoreline. But let's go back to them against the Kiwis as well.
Exactly.
20-22. So it is a coin toss. You know, there's both sides that happens. However, we're looking at the improvement of scoreline and the gap being bridged. And that requires patience and a pathway and
yes,
staying power.
Yep.
You don't just come out the gates and win games without having development underneath. And a lot of these nations are only just getting that opportunity where that development is starting to come through. You can see that with Japan.
Exactly. And having played over there and been and lived there for like 5 years, I see how much effort they put into their development in their high schools and in their university systems and in their top league teams, because they're behind the eight ball when it comes to size and physicality when they're 14, 15.
Yeah,
you know, we've sent a New South Wales Tonga under 15s team over there, and they've won, and they got to play against their under 17s and under 18s because of the size, and wow, our boys still won. But again, when all you're doing is training habits, standards, and building, and being patient, and you can bridge that gap when it matters, when you know by the time you hit the professional stage. So I think for everyone out there listening in the Pacific, especially with the PNG Chiefs coming in, just patience, time in the saddle. It will happen.
And stay supportive.
Exactly.
Stay supportive.
Stay supportive on it. That's a very, very good point. But we'll look at the game. What I was impressed here with Japan was their goal line D. When you think about defending on the goal line in rugby union, like the odds are always in the favour of the attack, because your hands and feet have to be behind the ruck. And you're only centimetres away, like from where the ball is inside the ruck of the try line. But for where Eddie Jones has got this team, because I know his camps are brutal.
Heard that.
They are brutal. His saying is that you got to crack a few eggs to make an omelette. So when you think about that as a saying,
yes,
in your training environment, you know they're bashing each other.
Yep.
But he understands that's what it takes to be able to compete against the other nations like the Wallabies, South Africa, and New Zealand. So they really fronted up in that area. And I just couldn't believe the players just getting in, chopping, getting getting up on their feet, numbers around the ball, and the way they defended. And it was ultimately 38-year-old flying the flag for the Old Bulls. Fijian number 8 for Japan, Michael Leitch. He got the turnover at a crucial time. You know, he is a special player. He's on track to become Japan's first ever 100th cap player.
Oh, amazing.
He's Fijian. So he's a good man, and I look forward to hoping he does get that milestone if the legs hang on just that little bit longer. But he's an amazing talent. And I think for the Wallabies, they'll be happy with the win. But at the same time, they're probably a little bit disappointed that they probably didn't put Japan away.
Yeah.
You know, because the mindset is still is like, it's Japan. You should win by a lot
more. You're a competitor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think that it was good to see Zane Nongor, Hunter Paisami get more game time. But they'll be looking at their depth. They'll be looking at how they can increase their depth and make sure they come World Cup time in 2 years, that they've got a strong squad of 40. Because at the moment, I feel like the Wallabies have a good 23 or world-class 23. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, and it probably showed on that game, they're lacking in depth.
Yep.
And Shawnee, that's all we have time for Rugby Union. Let's get over to Shelley Long with The Long Story Short.
The Long Story Short with Shelley Long.
Join us here with our PNG Orchid, Shelley Long, to take us through the PAC Champs games over the weekend.
Morning, guys. How are you today?
We are... Oh.
I'm good.
Yeah, Samoa's good.
Yeah.
With Chantel, she's flying in here. Our producer as well, Tiana. Holy, she's come in guns blazing with her jersey. But I'm all right still, Shelley. I'm all right. How are you?
I'm going well. It was a great weekend of footy. So smiles all around. And you know what, Sam, even though Tonga unfortunately did lose in the men and the women's games on the weekend, it's still a great opportunity for them to represent their talent.
We don't need the end and the end and the ends. Just say, yeah, that wasn't a good... All right, let's kick it off then. Which one are we going to start with?
We might start off with the Cook Island Moana versus Tonga in the Women's Pacific Championships over in PNG on the weekend. Unfortunately, like we just spoke about, Tonga did go down to the Cook Island Moana 42 points to 24, but it was an absolute great game all around. Cook Island Moana actually took out the silverware, first time in history that any team in both the men and women from Cook Island were to do that in the Pacific Championship.
That deserves a clap.
Yep.
How good's that? Kiana Takarangi, yeah, lifting up the goods there. Amazing.
She beat Brad Takarangi then.
Yeah. Hey. Finally, she's got some bragging rights in the household. Love it.
But yeah, you know what? History-making moments for them, and well-deserved. They had such a great campaign the last 2 weeks. And for me, Nanga Toko Toru Arakua was a standout in that game, as well as Kiara Siowani. She had an outstanding game on the edge for them. I thought amongst it all, the middle pack just did really well for the Cook Islands in that game. And unfortunately for Tonga, I think that heat really fatigued them out quite early in the game. They started off really well. Their ends to sets were good with Amanita Pucky kicking and really challenging them and testing them under the high ball. But for me, Shante Kiriaratu's ability to kick them out of trouble and maintain composure, particularly in those heat moments where you could see that it was close for a drink break, but they were still rolling down. And unfortunately for Tonga, their energy just really got juiced out of them in those moments.
Yep, I agree with you as well. I think that the Cook Islands, we had spoken about previously, and I don't think you were on, Shelley, but it was touching on the fact that they hadn't maintained their staying power through a whole game before, their focus and their staying power, and they've nailed that now. And that's why they're coming up on top in these games.
Yeah, 100%. And I think when you look at how they utilize their bench, they start really fast. They bring on their bigger girls towards the end of that first half, and then they maintain them through the start of the second half. I think that's a great way to utilize that bench. There's a lot of talent there. And I think when fatigue comes in, particularly for the Tonga side, when that fatigue comes in, they took Penatani off, I believe, towards that back end of that half. That's where it really opened up for them. So they bench utility was outstanding, and I think they brought a lot of power into the game.
And one other thing to touch on quickly is, how do you think the input from new coach Ron Griffiths has impacted them?
I think it's been great. I think he's been able to look at the team and really utilize the talents of this team. There's some really amazing players in there, and I think he's been able to pull out those little bit of, you know, extra Pacifica flavors in those players. And I think we saw that in that game. And I just love it. Like, he might not be from the Cook Islands per se, but I think he's really delved into that culture and really become a person in that team. So I'm really excited for him, and I hopefully look forward to seeing him staying amongst the Cook Islands.
Yep. Yeah,
big congrats to the Cook Islands. Commiserations to my Tongan girls. We go again at some point. Chin up, we're good to go. That's the best bit of advice I've got at the moment. But let's move over to the Jillaroos and Fetu Samoa. Obviously, the scoreline was huge, but at the same time, a lot of passion, a lot of pride put into that Samoan jersey, and those girls surely, certainly did their country proud.
Yeah, for the Jillaroos, they did win 60 points to nil against Fetu Samoa. But there were four Pacifica players playing in that Jillaroos squad, which I'd like to highlight, because, again, it takes a lot of courage. It takes a lot of thought to being able to represent the Jillaroos over your home nation. So for them, I think that's a really proud moment for them to be able to represent not just the Jillaroos, but also, you know, their homelands as well. For Fetu Samoa, though, you know what? It takes a lot of courage to come up against a team like the Jillaroos. Their systems, their development pathways, everything that they have here in Australia is well developed. And I think when you look at Fetu Samoa, they're definitely going to be better for it. But for me, Shalom Soso was outstanding again. That young star, she's absolutely killing it in the rugby league world. But as well, it was Serena Masanga's tackle on Yasmin Clydesdale that really showed the Fetu Samoa brought into that game as well.
Yeah, and Samoa were also riddled with a few injuries and players going down as well, but they definitely need that platform to come up against a team like that to have that experience, go away and come back improved.
100%. And with the World Cup coming up, there are now five Pacific teams, in that 2026 World Cup, and Samoa is one of them. So I think, you know, playing the competition that they'll soon play in a World Cup is just going to make them even better. And I think when you look at the team and the way that they played in that game, there was a lot of heart, there was a lot of pride for the jersey. And I think no matter what the score, they've made history in the fact that they've played the Jillaroos. And I think the last time they played them was back in 2013. So it's been quite a while since this match has been able to happen. So they've got to take a lot of pride in their steps for that performance.
Yeah, and speaking of the World Cup, lastly, the Fiji Pulikula, they qualified after beating Nigeria, and wonderful scenes with the Fiji Pulikula. I believe it's the first time ever, but how good's that?
Oh, it's outstanding. They beat Nigeria 62-4, absolutely dominated over there. And mind you, I don't know if you've seen a picture of the fields that they played on. It wasn't even a rugby league field. I believe it was like an NFL style.
AstroTurf. Yep, that's painful.
American-styled footy field. The lines looked a little bit different to what they should look like in rugby league. So the girls, you know what, great efforts to the Fiji Pulikula. I'm looking forward to seeing them in the World Cup. And like I said before, that's five teams within the Pacific to be named in that. So that's the first time in a very long time that we've been able to have so much representation at the World Cup.
Beautiful, Shelley. We know you have to run quickly to your other job. Is that where you're off to, or are you off to the gym?
The school bell just went.
So, yeah, don't be late to class. Otherwise, you were
in trouble by Mrs. Shelley Long.
Exactly. The kids will be going off if you're late. But thank you so much. We look forward to talking to you again next week, Shelley Long.
Thanks so much, guys. See you.
My name is Ali Kator, and I'm listening to Nissan Footy.
All right, Shoni, we have a special guest today, a very, very special guest. He has made some time for us in his busy schedule with the PNG Kumuls and being them right in the middle of their PAC Champs preparation, come off a great couple of wins as well. He's one of the OGs of the PNG Kumuls. He captained the 08 team at the Rugby League World Cup. He joins us now, John Wilshere. Welcome to Nissan Footy. Thank you so much for joining us.
No, thank you. Thank you for having me. And, appreciate the time and your patience. Obviously, it is a busy time with the Pack Champs on, but happy to make time and have a chat.
I appreciate it, man. Much love for it. And we're just going to go straight into you. You're obviously over there in Port Moresby. It is rugby league mad over there, and I got to experience that firsthand not that long ago when I got to go over there with that Pacific Sports Show for the 50th Independence, and I got to see it firsthand what it means to the people of PNG Rugby League. But firstly, whereabouts is your family from, your province from in PNG?
Yeah, so I'm actually from Moresby Province. So Lae is obviously the capital up there. So my family are from Buddybum. So they're part of the, I guess, the landowners up there, one of the clans up there, one of the six clans. So I was born up here in Alatau, not originally where I'm from, but as I said, I'm from Lae, and then obviously grew up most of my life in Lae, and then was just doing boarding school out of there into Charters Towers, North Queensland, just west of Townsville. And I guess that's how my footy journey started and end up kind of in the young gun system there with the Cowboys. And after that, when the Super League era come in, as a 19-year-old, myself, my brother, and a few of the other guys out of those boarding schools and Charters Towers all ended up in Perth under the Perth Reds with the Super League. And I guess that's how I kicked off my career. And obviously very fortunate enough to be reached out by, at that time, Bob Bennett, who was the coach for the Cummels, Wayne's brother. And yeah, fortunate enough at a young age to debut for the Cummels and been a part of that, I guess, as a player 10 years. And now my role as a team manager for the Cummels for another 10. So 20 years overall involved with the sport up here. And it's like wearing the jersey. It's just a privileged position to be in. And I'm happy that I can stay connected with the team and the country through rugby league.
I love that. And Wayne Bennett and Bob Bennett, they're instrumental to the game as well. And I'd just like to ask you, how do you feel about where the game has come to with Pack Champs across men's and women's, across the game altogether?
Yeah, and look, and you know, growing up here, and I bumped into Kevin Walters when they were up here for the Prime Minister's 30, and I got a picture of with him and the Kangaroos team back when they did the 91 tour, and I was, you know, just a young kid up in Lae. I was fortunate enough to jump on the bus with the Kangaroos for that game and just see where the game, obviously the passion hasn't changed, that still remains for the people, but, you know, certainly in terms of the sport itself and, you know, and the quality and the standard, you know, whether that's, you know, from a facilities point of view, you know, the players that I'd played with, we weren't fortunate enough to play at the NFS. But again, you know, when it comes to standards, just over the last 20 years has improved out of sight. You know, again, the playing standard, and that's with a lot of support from, you know, whether it's the likes of, you know, in terms of performance and pathways, so match officiating, you know, the standard and the quality of, you know, supporting that high performance space, it's certainly come a long way. In terms of the passion, as I said, that's always remained the same. And there's obviously a lot of noise with the NRL franchise coming in. We've got the Pack Champs currently underway. As I mentioned, we've got the Broncos up here and they're doing a tour with the trophy. So it's certainly a lot of hype and buzz at the moment. And it's really good to see because, you know, what it brings to the country in terms of prosperity, you know, sports tourism, just tourism in general. It's putting PNG on the map, you know, outside of rugby league. People want to know, where is PNG? What's PNG all about? So good opportunity there for Tourism Promotion Authority to jump on that and keep selling and waving the flag for PNG.
When we talk about that passion for yourself as a player, you know, what are your fondest memories around putting that Cummels jersey on and feeling that passion?
It's just everything. Like I was talking to some of the senior players just this week. Obviously, we played Cook Islands on the weekend and, you know, we're travelling into the stadium. And there's certainly now, obviously, you know, a lot more protocol and process in place now with transport. And I said, but back in the day, for anyone who played, you know, the back end of the you know, the 90s and the 2000s, show my age here, but, you know, just to have all that building up at the ground and, you know, a lot of the police trying to control that. So, again, you know, we talk about, you know, how far the game's come. I mean, even from a spectator point of view, there's a lot of, you know, education around that and what good spectating looks like. So, yeah, that'll always be, you know, an area for growth in the sport. It's just not the game itself, but in terms of, you know, spectator awareness and all that too. So, yeah, so the passion, you know, we'd get, and I'm sure you've heard the stories before with the OGs that have come on before, like the Roddy Griffins and the David Meads and the Trevor Extons and all those guys. I'll tell you the exact same thing. You know, we'd get changed at the hotel and, you know, and then you'd have to drive in and just basically take the field and it's kickoff. So obviously we've come a long way since then. But, you know, that just, again, really amplifies what the passion's like, you know, over here. But from a player, you know, I was very fortunate enough back in the day that we had a lot of, games on the road, so we were able to play in areas such as Wabag, Groker, Hagen. So we're hoping that, you know, as the game grows, that we can take a lot of the games now out of Moresby, and that way, you know, the current players get to experience, you know, that passion regionally, which we were fortunate enough to do, you know, mid to late 90s and into the 2000s.
And you spoke about Ron Griffiths. So he's with Moana, Cook Island Moana, as coach at the moment. How do you feel about all of these players who have played NRL and represented their countries stepping into roles as coaches for other teams, and specifically in the women's space?
Yeah, it's extremely important. Obviously, you know, it's part of that growth in the game, and not only from a football perspective, but it's similar to what we do with the Kummels and the national side. Is we try and get a lot of the former players in so they can, you know, outside of the technical requirements, is that we're trying to build connection with the jersey, with the country. There's a lot of players, and there will be in future that, though they may not have been born here, there's going to be grandparents, some connection here. So it's important that, you know, whoever you have in your staff can help build that connection for that player here in country, and we're happy to support that. But also, you know, the legacy of the jersey and what it means to play for PNG, and I'm sure it's the same, you know, with the other nations. So I think extremely important that we have a lot of the past players come and support that, and that's, again, whether that's the men's or women's. And even in the women's space, if I speak about the Orchids, we've got some former Kummel legends such as Stanley Gene, who, you know, the legend, he speaks for himself. So he's been there helping out with the Orchids. So I think it's really good that he can, you know, work in that space in the women's game and help grow that game for them too.
Can you take us back to some of those old school moments that you would have experienced as a player? Like, I'm so intrigued around what it would have been like as a player. Like, I looked at when I was over there, I think the Lay Tigers were actually playing. I'm still seeing the security guards, they're holding the branches or the sticks or something, yeah, you know, around the field. You just hear some of the stories that come back with the players of them getting mobbed and their kits gone everywhere like that. Can you give us something that sort of stands out for you?
It's a really special story, and it's probably the time was great because we had Marcus By come up here with his wife Heidi, and we've got young Cooper who's just coming to camp and make his debut. And obviously when you get the chance to sit around and talk to, you know, some of the legends of the game and share some of our stories, we had one moment there back in 98, obviously Storm had just won the grand final. And Marcus had come back, you know, about to play an Oceanic test match against the Maoris over in Kimber, which is where Marcus is from, and Hoskins Airport to the ground. You know, we're talking at least, you know, 10 to 15 kilometres, and just on the side of the road just had all the community come out, and they're throwing flowers at the buses as we're going from the airport to the ground, and I'd never seen anything like it, you know, before in my life, and I don't think anyone ever would. And then we got to, I guess, where we're being greeted, and we had David Wesley, Adrian Lamb and Marcus both literally within seconds of arriving, stripped down, get straight into traditional bilas. We're very, you know, welcome ceremonially. And so that was, I guess, in terms of getting to Kimbe, that experience. And then, of course, on match day, it goes to the next level. So we're playing, and at the time I was on the wing, so on the sideline, you know, it was basically the crowd was sitting there. So the touch judges running down the sideline, and I'm playing an extra 2 metres inside. And so we played the Maoris, and Marcus back then when he used to run, you know, he ran hard and with a lot of purpose. So he ended up, I can't recall the hooker's name, he'd ran over him, knocked him out. Tuera Nikau was playing at the time, and I just, the crowd went insane. And so I'd said to the trainer at the time, I said, listen, with about a minute to go, can you just let us know? Because I was on the furthest sideline away from the dressing shed. At some point, I'm going to get back over to that dressing shed. And sure enough, full time went. And before I got even across to the halfway line, we were being crowd surfed straight back to the dressing shed. I just kept pointing, saying, just take me that way, send me that way. And that was it. Just had to sit there and we crowd surfed all the way back to the dressing sheds. So, you know, moments like that, it's just phenomenal. Obviously, you know, you can't storm the fields these days or try and control that. But, yeah, that was certainly one memory that stood out back in 98, 99, and I think I can recall.
Oh, that's one way.
What a story.
One way of getting amongst the crowd.
Oh. Literally. How good was that?
We don't get to do that stuff anymore.
But tell you what, if they did it here in Moresby, it'd still happen today, I'll tell you that.
I'm sure the NRL would love that. First home game in Port Moresby, and then it's against the Panthers, Nathan Cleary just getting crowd surfed. Love that.
Hey, I've got a question for you. I've represented Fetu Samoa, and you're in administration and have been in there for a while now, being a team manager. So you would see see where all the gaps are. Apart from the cultural piece, proudly standing for your country and your nation, where is another way that we can contribute or help villages, the country, anything like that? Where is another way that we can contribute better other than playing, training, supporting, standing proudly? Let me know.
Yeah, I think small enterprise, tourism, all that stuff. So, for example, Alan ran some cultural connection sessions and we thought, well, wouldn't this be great if, again, you know, the whole theme for us was about cultural connection, legacy of the jersey, how can we continue to push that? And it's not just through the sport, but legacy in terms of tradition. So we organised through Alan with a lot of the, you know, mothers and aunties to run a cooking session. So again, you know, traditionally where, and again, culturally where a lot of this might have been the jobs of the women in the community and the villages, that we thought, well, you know what, this would be a great experience culturally for the boys to get involved in. You know, so they were given a task. We set them into teams. So 2000 World Cup in memory of those guys is 25 years on. We'd set teams up. So Team Bennett was for the coaching staff, for Bob. And then we had Team Lamb, Adrian, Team Marcus Byrne, Bruce Mando. So we split the guys up in the colours. They went down to the market. We're all given a budget. The mothers took them through their groups individually. And, of course, it was just pandemonium down at the markets. But the challenge was for the guys, you know, they were cooking different cultural meals from the different regions. So that's how we split the groups up. It was a great outcome in terms of that cultural connection. But to go back to your point about, you know, what are the areas, I think it's us as, you know, administrators is to look at how we can link up with community to help still drive our outcomes that we're trying to do within the team and support local businesses and whatnot.
Yeah, nice. And when I think about PNG, everyone's there talking about the PNG Chiefs that are going to come into the NRL. Thinking about like Joey Grimer's over there, he's helping out with the pathway systems. There's other people in and amongst them making sure there's development systems coming through. And I had a really good chat with Paulie Aiton when I was over there, because I was actually fascinated at how spread out PNG is and how hard it is to be able to get to some of the provinces and the villages because of the terrain. And he gave an example of Gorovoro there. Just, you know, it took him a few days to get a hold of him to come to hunters training because there was no service or how to get to him to say, hey, mate, you're in the team. That being a challenge, like, how do you improve that communication and that recruitment area to keep building those pathways to be able to make sure that the PNG Chiefs are going to be very competitive?
Yeah, and I think, look, Matt, and that's certainly an important piece for the, I guess, the long-term success of the Chiefs in terms of a well-functioning pathway for the kids coming through, what that looks like, you know, whether that's through schools or just normal community programs. It certainly does require a lot of strategic input on how, you know, I guess the best outcome for that to be. And probably, you know, if we're going to be realistic, you know, how aggressive that needs to be, because as you know, a lot of the players here don't really start playing till they're in their late 20s. So, of course, those critical development ages, you know, be it from, you know, 13s through to 16s is often missed. So at the end of the day, you know, it does come down to budget and what can be facilitated. So I guess the easy wins are, I guess, in around the capital cities, whether it's Port Moresby, Lae, Rabaul. I just like to think and hope that, you know, there is some real thought about how they can access and get, you know, get more of that regional input and participation.
Yeah, I think it's really important to have you on the ground and your experience in the game as a player and as well as in administration to bridge that gap where you are able to capture players before their 20s. That's absolutely crucial. That's where we're filtering through in the NRLW, such a healthy network of players. So I see where the benefit of that is. And that's what they do with the men's here in Australia already. So
that's what helps with the habits. You want to have those training habits and the off-field habits before you get to the NRL. You don't want to learn those habits and try and have to relearn that.
Yep.
Oh, do I have to be there 30 minutes before training? Or do I have to have good food and be hydrated? Like, they're those key development areas that need to happen from a very young age.
And it's not only habits, it's well-being. It's the mental capacity to be able to cope and thrive whilst doing that as well.
Yeah, and I think that's extremely important, especially in our Pacific nations where, if we can get that rolled out in these regional remote areas, you know, whether the final outcome's football or not, you're still going to have great people who have come through and learnt, you know, great traits that'll hopefully benefit them, you know, whether they do play footy or not. So, and I know, you know, guys like David Mead do speak high, you know, about what are your behaviours, you know, that you're doing, not just footy, but outside of that.
Couple from me before we finish up. Pack champs are happening at the moment. The team looks like they're in a really good spot. I just want to highlight Jason Dimitro with him being the head coach. I love that he wore a Billum on the sideline. How does that make you feel when you see a coach, as in sort of like an outsider, Australian, coming into a PNG environment and embracing the culture and wearing something as special as a Billum, you know, on game day? Because he wouldn't be doing that for South Sydney or when he was playing.
Yeah, right.
You know, but when you see that, how does that make you feel?
Yeah, look, it's really welcoming. And look, and I can't speak highly enough of Jason. Since he came on board with PNG, he's been the one that's really been driving that cultural connection. And the fact that he's driving that and being a part of that just tells you where he's at and what he's, you know, that he's here, you know, definitely for the long term. And, and he's trying to improve, just in particular, the local players that come out of the Hunter system or the Digicel Cup system. Jason's very astute in terms of watching all these games. You know, we'll touch base, you know, once a week, if not monthly, on progress, a lot of the guys. So he's very invested in this team and in this country. So he, you know, that's important to him, and is certainly showing, you know, PNG Rugby League that, you know, he's very intent on being here for a long time. And, you know, obviously we've got the NRL franchise coming up, and if anyone was to come and ask me from the NRL, who would you endorse for me? You know, certainly Jason Dimitro, he's right up there.
Yeah, nice. And then last one, coming up against Fiji this week, you got granite versus concrete, flair, speed, all the athleticism in the world in those two sides. What's important for the team to be able to, you know, get the job done and stay disciplined in their result and the way that they play?
Yeah, certainly shaping up to be, you know, a good game, that is for sure, given the talent across both sides. Look, I think from us, we've just really got to focus on, I guess, our processes. You know, the benefit was that we did have that hit out with the Cook Islands last week, and Cook Islands played really, really well and certainly pushed us. So there's certainly a lot of key takeaways from that. We'll sit down and look at some vision and some areas that we can certainly work on. If you don't get it right, you know, Moresby's a tough environment to play 80 minutes up here in the heat. Just got to respect the possession a bit more and respect the opposition a lot more, and yeah, and hopefully we can get the job done.
Nice work. Well, Johnny, I really appreciate your time. I know you're in the thick of it and organizing everything that goes into high performance and getting everything ready. Wish you all the best, and hopefully we get to cross paths at some time again soon. But yeah, loving the work that you're doing.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Give me three answers for this one.
Here we go. The end of our show. It is our game of categories. 3 points up for grabs each week. And I'm so happy again, T is not here being his competitive self. Make, you know, playing for sheep stations, playing for everything, getting sour if I get an answer right from his questions. It gets so dirty if I get 1 point.
Yeah, I see that.
You do see that? Yeah. Hopefully you don't follow in his footsteps.
No, not at all. I'm class. I've got that.
You do have a bit of class. I feel like with you coming on the show, we've been elevated to new levels because of your class.
Okay.
What are your three questions?
Okay, well, it's one question requiring three answers.
Sorry, yeah. Yep.
Yeah? Okay, I got the memo, so.
I'm going off your run sheet.
Another tick, Chantel employed.
She remembers what's actually happening on the show.
Okay, so I need you to name three female players who have represented two nations, either Samoa, New Zealand, and Australia.
Oh, that's a good one.
Do we have a countdown? Like
No, hang on. Don't put the pressure on. You know who's first up? Sala Tongatuki. She's played for Fetu before, and she's played for the Jewelers. Do you know why?
When was Fetu?
That was we introduced her on her segment on Friday, so I don't know when. That's not part of the question.
Okay,
when.
Okay, you can have it.
Do you know when?
Fine. Yes, with me.
Oh, was it with you? with you? Have you played for
Commonwealth?
Australia?
No, I play for Australia in sevens and 15s, but
that
I went
count?
To Samoa. No, it's got to be in rugby league.
In rugby league, okay.
Yeah. I mean, a couple of your options have definitely done other codes.
Aneta Nuasala.
Yes.
There's two.
What was it that Aneta has played?
She's played Ferns.
Yes.
Yep. Oh, and the other one, Tiana Penatani.
Yes.
There we go. Oh, yes. That's our time up. I got all three. Yes. Our good tea. He's going to be filthy about those.
I know, but questions. I did kind of help with the tipping knockouts.
Oh, yeah, that's it. You brought him back there. Brought him back. There. Okay, fair enough. But, hey, that is our time up. Make sure you tell your footy-loving friends about Nisian Footy. Find it wherever you get your podcast or on the ABC Pacific website. Shoni, you've been amazing. Hopefully we can get you back and we get the trio going.
Yeah, I like that.
Much love. And,
it's got a good ring to it.
It does have a good ring to it. And you're fantastic. And we wish you all the best.
This show was produced on the lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation.